Welcome back to The Guidebook, everybody. Today on the show, we're talking to Monica Shaw. Monica is an outdoor enthusiast who now lives in Scotland, and she runs a little getaway cottage, she leads hikes, and she is also the founder of The Writer's Residence, which is a portfolio platform for freelance writers. She's a freelance writer herself, and she also runs multiple Substacks. One of them is Eat Sleep Wild, and the other is The Writer's Residence. She has a lot of experience with freelance writing, and she knows the struggle of creating a portfolio website, and that's why she created The Writer's Residence. And I love talking to Monica because she has so many things going on at once, and she somehow balances them all. So I hope you guys enjoy our conversation about how she balances everything that's going on in her life, from her multiple Substacks and blogs to her in-person retreat business and even The Writer's Residence. Let's just get right into it. This is The Guidebook. We're sharing tips for freelancers, raw conversations with risk takers, how to become a digital nomad, and the emotions behind it all. I'm your host, Rachel. On the show, I share everything I've learned in the past 5 years of freelancing and living nomadically, showing you how you can work to live instead of living to work. I'm interviewing some of my favorite digital nomads and entrepreneurs to help you unlock your bravest self. If you want to become a freelancer or a digital nomad, this is the podcast for you. Okay, yay, we're recording. Okay, so I would love to start with, do you want to introduce yourself? I always forget to do this. So your name, what you like to do outside, and then what you do as like a entrepreneur person.
Yeah, sure. My name is Monica Shaw. what do I do as an entrepreneur person? Oh, what do I like to do outside as well?
Yes.
Actually, I'll start with the second question because it leads to the answer to the outside bit. But what do I do as an entrepreneur? So I do a lot. I mean, I don't know, like, if you're a freelancer, you know, you just are like always hustling, you know what I mean?
Totally.
And I've done tons. Yeah, I've done tons of different things. My background is actually mathematics, so that's led me to a lot of technical stuff. So I guess most notably right now, I run a software as a service business. So basically it's called Writer's Residence, which is actually, I discovered, quite hard to say. Writer's Residence, but that's what it's called. And it's a tool for writers to create a portfolio to market their work. And the business is pretty much solely run by myself with a couple developers who live in Australia and, a couple friends who are writers and kind of get the business. So, that's part of what I do. And that's sort of like the hopefully passive income, if you will. I mean, I'm still building it, very active, but I also, on the side, my real passion is the outdoors. So I have an outdoors business called Eat Sleep Wild, which combines mountain guiding, I guess. So, sorry, I should have prepped this. I'm trying to, okay. It's always hard to summarize things.
Yeah, and talking about yourself is always weird.
It is always weird. It started as a blog because where I could write about nature and hiking and stuff like that. I mean, what I'm super into is camping and wild camping. But it kind of evolved into me getting a mountain leader qualification so I can take other people out to do that. So I do a bit of that. And I now also run a holiday cottage in Scotland. So I now have a base for people to come and I can take them out. And and my partner, he's really into astronomy. So we kind of both come together a bit to offer like guided trips and then astronomy. So I'm kind of hoping the Writer's Residence provides that passive income to help us build the outdoors nature stuff, which is really the fulfilling stuff. So yeah, does that answer the question?
Totally. That's perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, you always, it's always cool to see how you make all of those streams
work in a balanced way. I know it's like really hard to find balance as someone else who also does, I also have multiple streams of income that are both like kind of time and energy and brain intensive. How do you find balancing all of these things? How do you decide like where to put your efforts and how to spend your time on all these avenues that you have?
God, that's like the eternal
such a loaded question.
Well, I find it quite hard, to be honest. I mean, I do it because I'm driven by all these things. So I'm really motivated. But I do struggle to focus like on kind of put some one thing aside to say, okay, today I'm going to focus on this project. So I'm toying with like multiple things at the moment, and they're sort of technology tools really to kind of like, I'm a big fan of this thing called Kanban. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Trello, so, Notion and Monday all have versions of Kanban boards in their tech.
Yeah. I will. Yeah. So,
they're sort of,
and, Asana does.
Oh yeah. Asana.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. and I actually, I trialed Motion, the AI, productivity app. It's all kind of the same stuff.
I tried Motion as well, but I realized that I don't like time blocking, and I was like, oh, but if AI does it for me, then I'll do it. And then I used it for like 3 weeks and I was like, wait a second, I still don't like time blocking. Why did I think I could just like fool myself into making that work?
I do like time blocking, but I found that there's so many things that go into your blocks of time.
Yeah.
And there's a whole other school of thought called like getting things done. I think it's a bit of an old school one, but there's a book called Getting Things Done and it still resonates with me. And it's all about capturing all the things you have to do and then prioritizing them, but also prioritizing them based on like the energy you have in the moment. So like, yes. I know that I'm most energetic and creative early in the morning. So I try to make that my time for, say, writing, because I do quite a bit of writing with the stuff I do. And I mean, a lot of what I do is based on, I used to do a lot of freelance writing. I don't do it as much anymore, but I love writing. So I do my creative work in the morning. I know in the afternoon I'm brain dead, so I use that time to do my accounting or something stupid. But I will say back to the original question, it's really hard and it requires a lot of focus. And it requires like really being into what you're doing. So yeah.
Would you say you sort of just, you intuitively schedule yourself and you do time block, but you don't time block in a way that's like, it's not unbiased time block. I feel like we have this ideal. Like when I learned how to time block, it was just this ideal of like, I want to get all these things done today. I'm just going to fit them in these blocks of availability around my eating and my sleeping and my working out. And the more that I schedule myself, which I think is something that a lot of freelancers and entrepreneurs in general really struggle with because we have all this freedom and we don't always know what to do with it. But like, I've learned that I generally work best from 10 to 4. I generally like intuitively scheduling myself. I have deadlines. I just have to get things done by the deadlines. There are certain things I need more focus time for. I literally have never estimated how long something is going to take me correctly ever in my entire life. And that's fine. And there are some things you can like put blocks around. Like I have little guards. Like if I'm going to go on LinkedIn to work on my LinkedIn marketing, I set a timer for an hour because I'll get like carried away in there. And there's no reason for me to spend more than an hour on it a day. Or like, if I'm going to do my emails, I set like a 15-minute timer because I'll just get like lost. And I have no awareness of time, truly, until I get hungry.
I actually do the, totally. I actually do something very similar. Like when I'm approaching a project, I say I'm only going to allow myself, you know, an hour to say, write this post or whatever.
Yes.
And be happy with what I can produce in that hour. And rather than like, because it is easy to fall down a rabbit hole. But yeah.
Yeah. It's such a challenge. It's like the never ending problem. And we change too. Like there are certain seasons where I absolutely do not want to work past 4 p.m. like in the winter when it's dark out after 4. Like, I will not be working in the dark. You couldn't pay me enough to do that. And I want to be like relaxing and going to bed. And then in the summer when it's light out late, I'm like, first thing in the morning, all I want to do is like go for a hike or go roller skating outside or like enjoy my day. I'm happy to work until 7 p.m. because it's still light out, right? So I think it's okay to like be flexible with yourself and get to know yourself as well.
Yeah, you do raise a good point, because I think as a sort of freelancer entrepreneur, you can get like obsessed with your work and feel like you can't stop. Like, there is no time to stop. Mm-hmm. But I think stopping is like 100% critical. I mean, I think like you, I also like, I have to walk every day.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, I just sort of stagnate. I can keep working, but I'm not actually creating. So
yeah,
but then it can be really too easy to say, I'm gonna take, you know, half the day off, or whatever. And actually, we now sort of live in, I also moved like you, last October to, the northwest of Scotland, which is super beautiful. It's the most magical place in the world. And I'm finding, like, I don't know, it's sort of a double-edged sword. Like, in one way, I am wanting to work less and be outdoors more just because it's fun.
Yeah.
And very rewarding. But it's also kind of driving motivation as well, because I know actually, if I can make these other businesses thrive, I will have that time to do it. And kind of because the nature business is about, it's not just about taking people out into the hills. It's actually about kind of giving people confidence and discovering like the mindfulness benefits of the outdoors. And it's like, I'm not going to be able to do that if I'm not getting that same benefit as well. So
yeah.
So yeah.
It's a little combo there.
A little combo. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. So, I mean, we're seeing you at a point where like a lot of things are coming to fruition, right? You're in Scotland, you have a place for people to stay now, you have guiding licenses, you have writer's residences like launched and a software that people can actually use. But like, how did you, what did the before look like? How did you get into this? When did you start building the things that you are, I mean, you're still growing them, but when did you start that process and how did that look?
Okay. Yeah, it was a long story, actually.
Perfect. Because, we have time. I mean,
yeah. Right. So let's see. In 2008, I was living in London. I'd moved there a few years prior from Austin, Texas. And I was, like I said, I did math as a background. And I was working as a banker. And I had to wear like an outfit, you know, with like shoes and like a business suit. I mean, God. Yeah. And I don't know if that was the deal breaker, but actually the job just wasn't, it was credit risk analysis, which is probably the most depressing financial topic you can get into. I don't know why I did it. Well, I do. I had a romantic idea about working in the city of London.
Yeah.
And it is a magical place. Like, there's something about it. And I thought, I just want to give that a try because I can. So I did. But after a year, I was like, this is a drag. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to save up 3 months of income and have a go at being a freelance writer. Because I'd already had like a blog and I was writing a bit. And I thought that was like the ideal job. So I did that. And I had a go. I made myself a website with like some writing samples that I kind of cobbled together from various bits and pieces, like actually mostly from school, I think, and my own stuff. And then I actually did get a few like gigs, and I got a really good one in like a national newspaper I was stoked about. But honestly, cost benefit analysis, I think I spent, you know, days trying to get a pitch accepted, and then like, you know, obviously the hours writing it, and I think it paid like £150 or something, and I was like, this probably isn't gonna work. So I mean, I was though going for more like journalistic type writing gigs. And then I ended up sort of veering towards more technical writing gigs, but still in a freelance capacity. And that actually worked really well. But my partner at the time was a software programmer. And he said, you know, Monica, most writers wouldn't be able to create a website. So it was 2008, mind you. I mean, yeah, I think all that was available was like, it was different.
Yeah.
and I used I used WordPress and it was super valuable in me getting any work. So he suggested we build a tool for other writers so they could create a website. So the idea was just that it was like a kind of scaled down WordPress with tools like specifically for writers. So we built that now, and that was in 2008. And actually we had a lot of success really early on. And then sort of what happened, life changed a bit. We ended up, well, I guess I should say at the same time, I was kind of discovering my interest in nature, because the UK has amazing, amazing nature and outdoor access. It's really unique, versus like the US, which is quite like, you know, there are trails and stuff, but in the UK, there's much more of, a sort of, I don't know. Well, they have a thing called open access, which means there are places where you can literally walk anywhere. And there's a real, it gives a real sense of adventure. So I started discovering this. I'd always like been into camping and the outdoors, but I never had that sort of like, whoa, this is what it's about kind of thing.
Totally.
So and since I was a freelancer working remotely, I was like, why am I living in London? Which is also, by the way, super expensive. So we moved to the countryside, and then I just started getting more and more into the outdoors, started another blog and started writing that. So that was when I first started Eat Sleep Wild. My partner and I eventually parted ways, and no big dramas, but the website, the writer's website kind of like got ignored for about 10 or 15 years, and it got really out of date. So
it's incredible that you came back to it and that you ended up getting it to come to fruition after all of that. So many people would have just like let it.
Yeah.
Die.
I mean, I deliberated, and it was actually, what happened? Loads has obviously happened during that time. So I was living in Wiltshire, but, kind of had this idea for a long time. I'd wanted to move to Scotland. It was funny how like COVID actually really affected how, my sort of moving skills. Like I used to be really good at just uprooting myself and starting over, but I had a really sweet place in Wiltshire. It was like a converted barn with an orchard and all this stuff. So it was quite hard to leave. But anyway, that's besides the point. I could tell a lot of stories about that place because it was very special, and I had a lot of great times there. And after my partner moved back to London, I kind of had this sort of first taste of being on my own in quite a while. And I just relished it. It was like, I often feel like those sort of like 5 years I was like a single person, or maybe, I don't want to say they're my happiest because I'm not single at the moment, but they were really happy times. And and it was actually then where I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to get into wild camping, because I'd never done it before. And so I started doing it like on my own in Wales, actually. Mm-hmm. And I just got hooked on it, and like it was empowering, you know. So yeah. I feel like I'm really rambling.
No, this is great.
But I am answering your question.
I think that we all have this idea in our heads when we see someone else who's like in a place where you are, where you're you have built something and you're continuing to grow it, but like I've built something, and people are always like imagining this like straight line path of like how I started my membership community or how I got to writing for a Fortune 500 company. And I'm like, actually, you don't even realize I used to like work at Starbucks, or I worked in a law office before that, or I like used to write about cannabis and now I'm writing for tech companies. Like there's, it's a winding path no matter who you are, because you're a human being. But we, when we get these like concise questions, we're like, oh, I have to have this like straight line answer. And there isn't a straight line answer because we're humans.
No, it's actually, it's super true. I mean, and actually, you know, now that you say that, when I did have that time on my own, my expenses were more because I was supporting myself. So I was probably really focused at the time on that and not building this software business. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like years go by, you evolve. And then, I met my current partner. We met in Scotland. And that was quite, I mean, I don't want to say like, oh, because of him, I was able to make the change I wanted to make. But mm-hmm. I did have this sense for a long time, like I was going to meet somebody who would just give me that boost. And I didn't know if it would be a romantic partner or a friend or a mentor. But it was quite like quite a powerful moment. And I just was suddenly able to just like, all right, it is time to close this chapter and discover something new. And so then I did move to Scotland, and I kind of actually realized in a lot of ways, my last like 2 years have been very all over the place, but in a way they've also been like where I've been a bit more clear, because I think, I don't know. It's really easy to get into a rut. And I think when I was like living in that other place, it was easy, but it was also a rut. And then getting out of it, it's was sort of like, you know, anyway, totally. So I was thinking about this writer's residence site that was just sitting there, and I was aware it was really out of date, and loads of customers have churned because of that. And it wasn't acquiring new customers really. And I was just thinking, you know, where should I put my focus now? Should I focus on getting more freelance work, or should I build out this website, or should I focus on being a mountain guide? I don't know. And when I kind of like weighed up all of the things, I realized actually I have this opportunity here. I've already got a product. It has customers, which demonstrates there's a need for it. And actually, if I could... And I did the math as well. Like if I invested in redeveloping it, how long would it take to make up for it if it was unsuccessful? So like suppose I rebuilt it and no one else signed up, you know, for whatever reason. Well, actually with the current subscriber base, it would still pay for itself within like a few years. So I That's felt like great. It was a risk worth taking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I looked for some developers. I actually used Fiverr, which I actually probably wouldn't recommend. I think I got quite lucky.
I've had very mixed results with Fiverr.
Yeah. I mean, I will say like, I mean, maybe there's a side point to this is like, I am not a programmer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say I ended up buying the business off of my partner so that I mm-hmm. could redevelop it. So there was a little bit of that admin to deal with, but I'm not a developer. So I had to find someone to work on it with me, which is hard, but it's actually not as hard as you think. And I've kind of like been enlightened by it because I realized actually, if you have an idea and you don't know how to do it, there are other people who can do it for you. Wow.
Yeah, so, totally. I think outsourcing is so really... scary for a lot of people. It's really hard. Like even I've hired virtual assistants multiple times and just like really struggled with it until I found the right person who I now am working with, and he's like completely taken over my podcast for me. So all I have to do is interviews, and it's amazing because it gets me so many clients and such good, like it's such valuable content, and it's fun for me to make, and I love it. And I'm so happy that I don't even have to think about it. Like sometimes I forget to promote it on my social media because I forget that he's like editing and posting these episodes because he does such a good job and doesn't make me do any of it. But like to get to that point of feeling comfortable both financially and emotionally with outsourcing and figuring out like how to find the right person, all of this, like I ended up finding him on LinkedIn. And he's the first person I've hired from LinkedIn. And I'm like, this is amazing. So happy about it. Mm. And I just found him through networking. He's actually in the UK and it's great. But like, I've worked with people before that were like not great, or you could tell they were like, sometimes the amount that you pay somebody does equate to the quality. Honestly, most of the time it does equate to the quality, and like deciding when to outsource can be really challenging and like whether it's worth the risk. But for you, it seems pretty, I mean, it's not cut and dry, but it's like obvious that you needed to work with somebody else because you didn't have those skills that you needed to do what you wanted to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could have upskilled. I could have taken a Udemy course on web coding. Absolutely. And I considered it because I'm a bit of a nerd. I like it. But then I'm like, I could like spend a year learning this and still be just a mediocre programmer. So, totally. And it is, would spending that time be the most value I could bring? So I think this is where, you know, maybe people who do struggle with delegating, you know, need to put their brain is like, what is the best way for me to spend my time so I get the most value out of what I'm doing? And what are things that actually someone else might be able to do a bit better? And equally, like if I'm paying someone to do that better, how then will the time I've saved help me grow the business so that, you know, I could delegate so much more probably. It's hard to delegate though.
It is.
Because I have delegated and I've had it. Yeah, like what have I delegated recently? Actually, I've delegated some writing tasks recently and then I got the result and I was a bit like, I would have done that differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, one of them was on Fiverr and I had to ask for my money back. It was so hideous. But what was the original question? Because I've gone on a tangent.
How did you get to where you are now, basically? Which I feel like you mostly answered. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've mostly answered it, I think.
I think it's helpful too, because like one of my other questions is like, do you have any tips for other people who are wanting to do the same thing? And like talking about outsourcing and like whether or not you should hire people from Fiverr and like all of these things are good tips. But what would you say, like in hindsight, are perhaps like some mistakes you made or some things you might do differently in that journey?
That is a good question. I think like maybe this is a common mistake and everybody makes it, but like doing work that doesn't pay what you're worth, mm-hmm. I suppose. I think like universally people kind of feel this nervousness about charging a particular amount for a job. And I still do. And you know, my day rate changes depending if I'm writing a technical thing, that's actually quite challenging work. So I might charge one rate for that. If I'm doing something else, it might be different. But
yeah,
I would say across the board, I probably should be charging more. And I think I'm kind of rambling again, but
no, this is good.
Yeah, I think it's worth
evaluating. Yeah, because we all.
I think it's worth actually taught.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's worth talking to other people and asking what they charge.
Yes.
And you might actually be surprised, like some people don't charge enough as well. But maybe if there is a bit more of an open dialogue amongst sort of the freelancing community about what you should charge. And I know people are trying to do it. You can research this. You can Google, what should I charge for a 1,000-word article or whatever. And there's so many different ways to look at it, but I think maybe go in on the assumption that like, what do I think I should charge for this? And probably like add to it by, yeah. I don't know, maybe even double it.
Yeah.
So
We all struggle with that when we start out, especially women for some reason, definitely undercharge more. And I always tell people, like, before you even talk to somebody else, before you even look at like Googling how much you should charge for something, you need to know how much you need to make in order to support yourself, because otherwise there's no point in you doing this. Like, someone else could charge $200 a blog post, but that might not work for you. So regardless, like, you need to know how much do you spend every month and how much do you need to earn to cover that, and then how much you need to earn above that to pay your taxes. And then you'll get a good baseline hourly rate from that equation. I actually have a rates calculator that's literally just a spreadsheet you put in, like, how much you generally spend every month and how many hours you want to work, billable hours. And that will spit out a baseline hourly rate for you and like a goal rate that's like actually probably what you should charge. And then you can, based on that, be like, okay, well, it usually takes me 4 to 6 hours to write a blog post, so I'm going to charge 5 hours as a flat rate. Or I'm going to talk to other bloggers and see what other people are charging to see if that 5 hours of my time rate is standard for the industry or makes sense. And you can determine, like, okay, I can only write 3 or 4 blog posts a week. I'm not going to charge so little that I need to write 6 per week. I have to charge a little bit more than that. Or like, okay, most tech companies are willing to pay $700 a blog post, but I really want to charge 8. So I'm going to try that. And it's kind of an experiment at the end of the day. But I think I agree with you. Like, we really need more transparency with freelance rates. And there are databases out there and there are people sort of talking about it, but I feel like it's not that overt. And I feel like a lot of times too, like, my rates change and I'll charge differently based on the client sometimes. Like, I'll look up their revenue. I'll look up how much they're worth, like their valuation. I'll look up how much funding they've gotten. And sometimes that'll influence, like, I can tell that their marketing budget is bigger than another company, and that will help me determine, like, oh, actually, I could probably charge these people $900 and they won't even bat an eye. Like, it's a Fortune 500 company that has a huge marketing budget, and I have a lot of experience and knowledge in this industry, so it makes sense for me to charge that. Or, like, when I started, I was actually writing for coding boot camps, and I was like, oh, $200 seems average. I definitely can't charge, like, I could not get anyone to say yes to more than $400 a blog post. So I started pivoting my niche when I decided I needed to make more than that. But I think that, like, you need to know what goes into your rates and why you're charging that before you, like, arbitrarily decide, like, Susie charges $200 blog post, so I'm gonna charge $200 a blog post. Because you'll get better results and you'll feel more stable and confident if you know why you're charging what you're charging to.
Yeah, I think you know, another point to that is, like, I think people underestimate how much time they have to spend because they negate the stuff like the time it takes to research, the time it takes to talk to the person about what they want. And actually, on that point, I thought of another mistake that I have made, and I think a lot of people make, is working with crappy people. I don't mean crappy people, but there are a lot of people out there who want to hire writers or programmers or whatever, and they actually don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a skill, like, if you're thinking about taking a job, you need to, like, kind of, you need to interview the person you're trying to get the job from, because just to learn if they know what they want. I mean, I was hired once to write blog posts on e-commerce, and I'm like, yeah, this is great. You know, like, it was going to be a regular gig. It actually did pay well. I wrote a couple pieces. They never got published, and time was going on. And, I kind of inquired, like, why aren't these posts being published? And, you know, what's the content calendar for the rest of them? And they're like, oh, well, we're not really sure if this is the angle we should be taking, and blah, 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 blah. And it ended up kind of drying up. And, but it was because they didn't really know what they wanted when they hired me in the first place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a little bit of like a, in my, I think it's natural to sometimes like blame yourself. There was a bit like, well, should I have been driving this content strategy? But that's not what I was there to do. And actually the whole issue is even bigger than their content strategy. They didn't even really know what their business strategy was. So yeah, I think making sure people know what they want so you don't end up like writing something and then they read it and they're like, oh, this isn't what I wanted. And it's because they didn't really know what they wanted in the first place. So I guess it's about getting a really good brief for the work. And if the client can't provide a good brief, then they're probably not ready to work with you and they will drive you crazy. So,
offering strategy, I definitely agree with that. And I think too, like discovery calls, we look at them as like, if you've only worked as a full-time or part-time employed person, like a W-2 person, you see it as like you're being interviewed by the client to see if they want to hire you. But in reality, a discovery call is for both of you. You're also interviewing the client to see if they'll be a good client. But I think especially when you're newer, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like, oh, this is a sales call and I have to sell my services and I have to get clients. So like, I'm just going to sell them to whoever will take them. And then you get on this roller coaster with a client who like is non-committal or gives you too much feedback that isn't even justified because they didn't give you a good brief or whatever. So in that discovery call, treating it like you're interviewing them and you're running the show will change your business. Like for my first probably 2 years, I would go into it like, this is a sales call. I have to sell my services. I hope this person likes me. And then after my second year, I was like, wait a minute. I want to vet my clients more. I want to get better clients. I don't want to just be like dragged around by these low paying clients just because they're easy to get. And when I turned into I'm actually interviewing the client and I started actually saying no to projects that I realized like this is going to make me miserable to work on, even if it does pay fine or this person clearly doesn't know what they want or whatever, I started to realize, or like some clients, they don't have a style guide, but they already have examples of what, like I wanted, a client came to me and wanted me to do product descriptions for them, but they didn't have a style guide or a brand voice guide, but they already had product descriptions on their page that an in-house copywriter had made, and that in-house copywriter left. And so they were just hiring me freelance to fill that gap. I was like, okay, well, I can make you a style guide as a part of a larger package. I will only take on this project if you can approve this style guide that I'm going to make for you in order for me to write this copy, because I can't do it without it. They say yes, then you can upcharge for that. You're helping them, because if they hire another writer, they have a style guide now, and you're helping yourself make it easier, and you're like clarifying with the client before you actually write those product descriptions so that you don't have to rewrite them later, theoretically, that like, yes, this is what we're looking for. Yes, this is true of our brand. That was life-changing to me. Being able to like take those discovery calls to the next level from will you hire me to, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Just want to make sure we're on the same page. If we're not on the same page, here's how we can get on the same page and charging for that. Or we're not on the same page. I don't think this is going to work well for me, but I can refer you to somebody else. It's like, that's how you run a good freelance business. You know what I mean? Like taking, and that's a skill that you have to learn how to do too.
Yeah, I feel like I've said two kind of cool things there. Like you talked a little bit earlier about like pivoting your niche, and just we're talking about like, you know, upselling. And actually, I think as you gain, it's nice when you start gaining that confidence to know that you can potentially do something a bit more lucrative. I mean, I spent a lot of time doing a lot of stuff that was like kind of SEO related because I have a technical background. But then I realized like, I have a very strong technical background, and I'm like, what am I doing like SEO? So I started to look for actually more, I don't know, I'll call it data science projects. And that sort of exploded my possibilities. I feel like that's probably a matter of just like bravery, you know, to say, actually, I'm not going to take these piddly jobs just because I know I need some money. I'm going to actually take some time to go for something better. And that actually, like, I don't know, is worth my time and will help me improve. I mean, so yeah, it's that sort of,
so
that
risky
sort of growth thing. It does feel risky. It's confidence building. I think a lot of writers possibly let themselves get pushed around a bit because of that desperation for getting a job, when actually, like, you know, writing is a talent. If you can do that, then you're among the special people that deserve, I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I think also we view it as, like, as a freelance writer, like, oh, I'm just providing writing. But at the end of the day, you're not. Like, what is your writing? What is the result of your writing? Where did it come from? How did you get it? Like, the result of writing those product descriptions is selling products and earning the company revenue and relating to their customers and shaping their brand voice and making them an entity that is in demand. And writing that style guide makes a cohesive brand voice. It helps writers get to know the brand. It helps the brand hire better writers, and it makes their business more efficient, and they wouldn't even know how to start doing that themselves. So, like, those benefits are really what you're selling and really what you're offering. Like, a great blog post educates an audience and also ranks on search engines and also gets people to think, oh, this is, like, a real voice, a real brand. I trust them. I like them. I know them. Now I'm willing to buy their product. It's not just writing, right? It's not just words. It's not just sitting down at your computer in a Word document with some information. It's so much more than that. It's, like, the feelings you evoke and the personality you inject into it. So I think it's important for us to see, like, even as a freelance writer, you're actually, like, a marketer and kind of a psychologist and kind of, like, a manipulator, and you're creative, and it's so much more, you know?
It's actually, yeah, and I mean, all those points that you raise are super poignant, particularly because of, we're now entering this AI ChatGPT world where, you know, writers are feeling, like, at risk. Let's face it, there will be people out there who think that AI can replace writers. So writers are now in a position where they have to, like, kind of defend their craft and also, have belief in their skills, because the things you said about psychology and voice and stuff, are those things are irreplaceable by AI. And those are the things that I think bring real value to writing. So, So I think as writers kind of market themselves, they need to actually have that at the top of their mind. And it'll probably become even more and more important for writers to kind of push that human angle that, actually they can provide something that no one else can, particularly in, you know, if we're talking about a particular niche or something like that. So yeah, it is interesting times in that regard.
Yeah. So with your writer's residence software, what does that look like? Like, what can a writer expect when they sign up for something like that?
Well, the service says, you know, create a writing portfolio, create a beautiful writing portfolio with ease. I think that's our tagline. maybe that's our old one, but you get the idea. Anyway, on the surface, it's, you know, what do they get? They'll log in and they get a platform where they can create a website really quickly. I don't want to say it's geared towards not techie people, because, you know, a technical person could use it, but it's really geared towards anyone who wants to get their work out there and doesn't want to spend loads of time on the tech because they know they'd rather be spending their time writing. So on the surface, you know, that's kind of its core offering. It's an online writing portfolio. But I kind of like to think it's a bit more than that, because we're such a small business. I mean, I'm the person behind, at least at the moment, if we grow like crazy, it would change. But at the moment, I'm the person who answers support tickets in response to emails. And I'm quite connected to the users. I like, you know, connect with them on LinkedIn. I reach out to them and all that stuff. And the product is built on my own experience as a freelance writer. So I kind of know the challenges that freelance writers have. So whilst they get a writing portfolio, they do also get kind of like one-on-one support from someone who gets it. And I do have alongside of it a Substack as well that I've recently started. That's a bit more the personal side of like my own experiences and learning points from kind of being a freelancer. So that's kind of growing into a bit more of a community side of the Writers Residence platform, sort of beyond just the portfolio, but also like the broader issues of marketing yourself. So yeah, I think that sums it up.
Yeah. No, that's great. I love the Substack community that you've created. You've been pretty active in like I honestly have not taken advantage of the Substack threads, and you've been using them pretty actively. And I've been lurking. I've been watching it.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm still, I mean, Substack is a whole topic in itself, and that's like, I find it quite exciting because I feel like writers could at last take charge of their content and write what they want and potentially make an income from it. I mean, that's like the holy grail. But it's also a bit of an art form, and even like the topic of how to succeed on Substack is like a whole writing topic in itself.
I mean, we could have a whole episode about that. Yeah, there's Substacks about Substack. It's like the LinkedIn's about LinkedIn.
Yeah, so exactly. And I think I'm kind of, I don't know, constantly trying to experiment with ways to get to know the audience so I know how they want to interact and what are their pain points. Like, who are these readers? I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I do know that, I know they're writers. I know they're interested in marketing their work, but you know, that's quite like, I don't know. I'm rambling again.
Well, I think it's a concept that I learned actually recently from Liz Wilcox. I've done email marketing for a long time now, and I love it. And I feel like I understand the technical bits of it, and I'm really good at writing subject lines and content and all of that. But I have never felt like it was simple, and it always feels kind of overwhelming and a little bit mysterious. And it's like, how do you figure out who's in your email audience? Even though you sort of have a general broad idea of that avatar. So Liz Wilcox has like an email marketing membership. I generally do not share about memberships, especially paid ones, but this is $9 a month. It's not a deal. It's a steal, man. I was shocked. I went on her website, and literally just her homepage made me feel relieved about my email marketing. It's insane. I've never seen it so simply put. And she has this formula that's like, you go from follower to friend to customer. So it's like, it's basically the sales funnel, but like wicked simplified. And she has a chart when you join the email marketing membership that gives you all the details of like how you get a follower, how you turn that follower into a friend, how you turn that friend into a customer. And that's sort of like what you're doing with Substack right now. You have all these followers. You're using threads to get to know them better. So you're turning them into your friends. And then those people become your customers once they're your friends, because it's that like, no trust thing that we know from marketing. And it's like, I knew all of these concepts, but then when she put it into that chart, I was like, oh, it's so simple. And she has all these templates. So I've been like using the templates, and they're so easy and they get such high conversions. I made my email welcome series based on her free templates. They're literally free on her homepage. And I was just like shocked. I've made so many welcome series, and that was like the easiest welcome series I've ever made. And it's gotten such good results. And like, it's my own copy, but it's the formula, and it's so much simpler than anything I've ever done before. And I was just so surprised by it. And I feel like that's sort of maybe not like consciously what you're doing, but you're doing that process. And that is like, that is how we find out. That's how we get to know people. And like, I think you're the same as me where like I tried selling a course for a while, for 2 years. It took me years to build it. And then I finally started selling it and it wasn't selling well. And I realized I hated it. And the reason I hate it is because there's no personal connection. I'm not like able to check in with people because they don't respond to you. And I don't know who's taking the course. I don't know who's bought it. It feels very disconnected versus like my membership group or my one-on-one coaching. It's so connected, right? And that difference is meaningful in the business. And I think you're doing that too with Writer's Residence, where you're like making those meaningful actual connections and you're getting to know them. And it's not just, it's not about revenue for you. It's about building a platform that is actually helpful to people, is actually meaningful. And I love that. That's like what I admire most about what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you. And actually, what I do like about Substack in that regard is it's got kind of like multiple ways to get to know your audience. So I know there's like the threads where you can really like interact on a particular topic, but even like the comments and the notes and stuff like that. I just feel like it's, oh, and like even surveys and a post and stuff. It's got a lot of like neat little tools to like just try different formats and formulas. I've just started experimenting with podcasts actually. So, and webinars, which was I'm still like figuring out. So I did my first webinar a few weeks ago now on ChatGPT. And it was awesome. Cause like, you put these things out there and you sort of think, is anyone reading this? Is anyone going to join?
Yep.
And, I didn't market it heavily because it was sort of a trial run, but like over 100 people signed up and I'm like, wow, that's if this amazing. Is what happens. Yeah. And if this is, and it's like, oh, I've tapped something that like people are really concerned about right now. And, you know, and again, it sort of goes back to the core of why I started the product, which is I have a technical background. I can understand these things and I can hopefully communicate them in a way that mortals can understand and potentially benefit from.
Yeah.
So, and people who came, they participated in the chat throughout and wrote emails after with follow-up questions. So that was super exciting. So I've sort of turned that into a podcast/videocast on Substack. And I'm going to sort of follow it up with a few more kind of things on the same theme. But it's so cool when you kind of like crack your audience and realize, oh, that's what it's really making them tick. Because once you do that, it sort of answers so many other questions about what to do next. So,
yeah. I love that. Well, it's been really great talking to you and learning from both of our mistakes today. I love that. I feel like it's really easy to look at somebody who has something like what you've built and think, oh, they know what they're doing and they've got it all. And it's like, actually, I didn't always know what I was doing and this is totally an experiment and that's okay.
Everything is an experiment. I mean, for sure. And it's like, it's a constant learning curve, but I think, it's also like, it's about kind of getting on that spiral and then like just getting into what you're doing and then you kind of just don't stop.
Yeah, totally.
You're into it. It's momentum. And having those little like wins, like the webinar or like a really awesome gig or something, or even like for us actually Writer's Residence, you know, getting it to like X number of subscribers. When you cross these little plateaus, they're quite rewarding. So and I guess I would add like it's worth measuring what you're doing in whatever way makes sense to you, because it's so motivating. Like I have a sort of monthly pass where I look at like, well, I have so many things going on. You know, I have like the Holiday Cottage and Writer's Residence and other stuff, but I have some key metrics that I look at, like how many bookings or how much traffic did I get, or what else, like how many people are subscribing, how many people canceled, you know, just key. I have a bunch of key numbers, so it's like kind of worth having that, and the numbers can be action-based. So like they could be outreach, like I have a goal of reaching out to 10 people a week about this particular product or whatever service. And just tracking what you do is really, really important.
Yeah, I completely agree. I really enjoyed this new year. I did a bingo goal setting. So I made like a bingo card with each of my goals as like one of the squares. And the real aim with it is like to get bingo. But at the end of each month, I look at it and I'm like, what did I do this month? And I realize actually I'm making little progress toward all of these bigger goals. And before I made the bingo card, I would think like, oh, I haven't done enough for this, or I haven't done enough for that, or I'm not working on this, or I haven't accomplished that. And actually I am. I'm just not giving myself credit for it, or I'm not realizing it. Or it was like one little message that was like, hey, do you want to be on my podcast? And I want to be on 5 podcasts this year. That one little message is 1 in 5. That's 20% of my goal. Like, why am I not excited about, like, it's meaningful. Like,
yeah,
you should look at that. And so that has been helping me keep those goals and metrics top of mind. And I think you could easily take that bingo card template and do the same thing if you have multiple businesses, like as tasks, like check how many signups I got, check how many cancellations I got, check how well my posts are doing, how much reach, how much engagement, all of these little things you can sort of like build into your monthly analysis. I love that. And I think it's easy too to overlook, like we get so little praise as freelance writers and it's nice when we get it, but we'll just get like a little email and then we like archive the email and we're like, thanks. But like take a screenshot of that and like put it in a folder and like save it and look at it again and remind yourself of it. Put it on your website. Like these are those little meaningful things. It's so easy to be like, oh, my next goal. Oh, this. So I have to do this. My to-do list is so long, blah, 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 and not pay attention to like, I'm doing a great job and I'm making steps towards my goals right now, every moment of every day, even when I'm like resting and watching TV at the end of the day, even when I'm going on my morning walk, even when I'm like productively progressing, whatever. It's happening. I think it's important to recognize it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you say that because like a few weeks ago, I got this Trustpilot review from one of our users and it was like 2 paragraphs of like glowing sentiment. She'd been using it since like 2010 and like all this stuff. And I've sort of pinned it in my inbox and put it on so that I see it every day just because it's just like you say, it's a nice reminder. Part of me thinks maybe I should like do something with it, but yeah. I don't know, like frame it so because sweet. It's just so glowing. But yeah, but it is worth like celebrating those successes and little things like that make you realize or it reminds you why you're doing it and that, yes. You know, you're adding value and that, you know, even if progress is slow, it's worth just pushing at it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Progress is progress. Hell yeah.
progress over perfection.
Yes.
Is what I always say.
I need to get that tattooed on my forehead. Seriously. Yeah, we should get temporary tattoos printed up with that and just like send them to people who need it.
Seriously. Oh, yeah,
that's actually a great idea. I'm gonna write that down. So where can people find you online and what is like what do you have going on that people can participate in and find you at?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's Writer's Residence, obviously. So if you're a writer and you're interested in marketing your career, you can check it out. However, I appreciate you may already have a website, but in which case you should check out my other website, which is eatsleepwild.com. We've just launched this holiday cottage in Scotland where we run guided hikes and astronomy nights. And we're actually also experimenting with running some supper clubs. So if you're into the outdoors or Scotland or food or hiking or the night sky, we have the darkest skies in Europe where we live.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we do. And we have the most northerly observatory in the UK with 2 telescopes. So we have an astronomy club, which is mostly a local thing where we run kind of like one-off events, but people can also like come and stay at the cottage and sort of have a kind of guided tour of the night sky. And then the next day, follow it up with a guided hike up one of our beautiful mountains. And if they want, they can also have food prepared in the evening. We're massively into cooking, which I could talk for hours about. But so yeah, there's a lot, there's a lot going on. And Scotland is beautiful. It's the most magical place I've ever been, and I highly recommend visiting, particularly the northwest of Scotland. We calculated yesterday. I'm in Chicago at the moment. Represent Chicago. The county we live in is like the same, roughly the same area as sort of Chicago in the suburbs.
Oh.
But the population of where we live is only like 1,007. So it's like super sparsely populated. So I think it's the least populated area in all of the UK. Anyway, just a random thing.
It must be very quiet.
It's very quiet over winter, which I love. So it makes some people struggle, though. And then in the summer, it's extremely busy with tourists, which some people like and some people struggle with. So, it's a bit of a mix.
Double-sided coin.
But yeah.
Well, this was
I hope this was okay.
Yeah, no.
I have a little bit of jet lag, so I feel a bit like off kilter, but hopefully it was okay.
That's fair. No, you were totally good. This was great. It was good to have you on and hear more about how you got to where you're at. So thanks for doing this. Wow, y'all. I hope that episode resonated with you as much as it did with me. I feel like Monica is one of the few people who has moved around as much as I have and tried out different careers and businesses as much as I have. And I really admire her stick-to-itness and just the way that she goes through life prioritizing what she wants to prioritize when she wants to prioritize it. It's been so fascinating talking with her today. I hope you guys will check out the Writer's Residence, take a look at it. The link is in the description below. And before we go, I just wanted to let you know that I still have one slot left for one-on-one coaching. This is pretty rare. I'm not opening more slots until July. So if you think that you're interested in one-on-one coaching, there's a link in the description to check that out. And if you're not sure if we'd be the right fit, even after listening to my voice all the time on this podcast, you can set up a discovery call with me to see what it's like to have a little mini coaching session with me. We'll go over the Freelance Writer's Roadmap together and talk about your biggest struggles to see how we can either boost your business or start and launch your freelance writing business. I hope I see you on my calendar soon. And if not, I'll see you next week for another episode of the Guidebook Podcast. This podcast was created by Rachel Meltzer and edited by Matthew Usherwood. The music is by Ketza from the Free Music Archive. You can find more information in the show notes below. P.S. Did you know that I offer coaching for freelance writers? You can find more information on store.meltzerseltzer.com. That's store.meltzerseltzer.com. MeltzerSeltzer.com.